45. Middlefest. 3.5 years ago. Shallan poked at the cage, and the colorful creature inside shifted on its perch, cocking its head at her. It was the most bizarre thing she'd ever seen. It stood on 2 feet like a person, though its feet were clawed. It was only about as tall as 2 fists atop one another, but the way it turned its head as it looked at her showed unmistakable personality. The thing only had a little bit of shell on the nose and mouth, but the strangest part was its hair. It had bright green hair that covered its entire body. The hair lay flat, as if manicured. As she watched, the creature turned and began to pick at the hair. A large flap of it lifted up, and she could see it grew out of a central spine.
"What does the young lady think of my chicken?" the merchant said proudly, standing with hands clasped behind his back, ample stomach thrust forward like the prow of a ship. Behind, people moved through the fair in a throng. There were so many. 500, perhaps even more, people in the same place.
"Chicken," Shallan said, poking at the cage with a timid finger. "I've eaten chicken before."
"Not this breed," the Thalen man said with a laugh. "Chicken for eating are stupid. This one is smart, almost as smart as a man. It can speak. Listen. Jack son of Nun, say your name."
"Jack son of Nun," the creature said.
Shallan jumped back. The word was mangled by the creature's inhuman voice, but it was recognizable. "A Voidbringer," she hissed, safe hand to her chest. "An animal that speaks. You'll bring the eyes of the unmade upon us." The merchant laughed.
"These things live all over Shinovar, young lady. If their speech drew the unmade, the entire country would be cursed. Shallan."
Father stood with his bodyguards where he had been speaking to another merchant across the way. She hurried toward him, looking over her shoulder at the strange animal. Deviant though the thing was, if it could talk, she felt sorry for its being trapped in that cage. The Middlefest Fair was a highlight of the year, set during the mid-peace, a period opposite the Weeping when there were no storms. It drew people from hamlets and villages all around. Many of the people here were from lands her father oversaw, including lesser light eyes from families who had ruled the same villages for centuries. The dark eyes came too, of course, including merchants, citizens of the first and second Nons. Her father didn't speak of it often, but she knew he found their wealth and station inappropriate. The Almighty had chosen the light eyes to rule, not these merchants.
"Come along," father said to her.
Shallan followed him and his bodyguards through the busy fair, which was laid out on her father's estates, about a half-day's travel from the mansion. The basin was fairly well sheltered, the slopes nearby covered in jella trees. Their strong branches grew spindly leaves, long spikes of pink, yellow, and orange, and so the trees looked like explosions of color. Shallan had read in one of her father's books that the trees drew in creme, then used it to make their wood hard like rock. In the basin itself, most of the trees had been broken down, though some were instead used to hold up canopies dozens of yards wide, tied in place high above. They passed a merchant cursing as a windspren darted through his enclosure, making objects stick together. Shallan smiled, pulling her satchel out from under her arm. There wasn't time to sketch, however, as her father barreled on toward the dueling grounds, where, if this was like previous years, she would spend most of the fair.
"Shallan," he said,
causing her to scurry to catch up. At 14, she felt horribly gangly and far too boyish in figure. As womanhood had begun to come upon her, she had learned that she should be embarrassed by her red hair and freckled skin, as they were a mark of an impure heritage. They were traditional Vaden colorings, but that was because In their past, their lines had mixed with the horn-eaters up in the peaks. Some people were proud of the coloring, not her father, so neither was Shallan.
"You're coming to an age where you must act more like a lady," father said.
The dark eyes gave them plenty of room, bowing as her father passed. Two of father's ardents trailed after them, hands behind their backs, contemplative.
"You will need to stop gawking so often. It will not be long before we will want to find a husband for you."
"Yes, father," she said.
"I may need to stop bringing you to events like these," he said. "All you do is run around and act like a child. You need a new tutor at the very least."
He'd scared off the last tutor. The woman had been an expert in languages, and Shallan had been picking up Azish quite well, but she'd left soon after one of father's episodes. Shallan's stepmother had appeared the next day with bruises on her face. Brightness Hashe, the tutor, had packed her things and fled without giving notice. Shallan nodded to her father's words, but secretly hoped that she'd be able to sneak away and find her brothers. Today she had work to do. She and her father approached the dueling arena, which was a grandiose term for a section of roped-off ground where Parshman had dumped half a beach's worth of sand. Canopied tables had been erected for the light eyes to sit at, dine, and converse. Shallan's stepmother, Melise, was a young woman less than 10 years older than Shallan herself. Short of stature, with button-like features, she sat straight-backed, her black hair brightened by a few streaks of blonde. Father settled in beside her in their box. He was one of four men of his rank, fourth Don, who would be attending the fair. The duelists would be the lesser light-eyes from the surrounding region. Many of them would be landless, and duels would be one of their only ways to gain notoriety. Shallan sat in the seat reserved for her, and a servant handed her chilled water in a glass. She had barely taken a single sip before someone approached the box. Brightlord Revelar might have been handsome, if his nose hadn't been removed in a youthful duel. He wore a wooden replacement, painted black, a strange mixture of covering up the blemish and drawing attention to it at the same time. Silver-haired, well-dressed in a suit of a modern design, he had the distracted look of someone who had left his hearth burning untended back at home. His lands bordered father's. They were two of the 10 men of similar rank who served under the High Prince. Revelar approached with not one but two master servants at his side. Their black and white uniforms were a distinction that ordinary servants were denied, and father eyed them hungrily. He'd tried to hire master servants. Each had cited his reputation and had refused.
"Brightlord Devar," Revelar said.
He did not wait for permission before climbing up the steps into the box. Father and he were the same rank, but everyone knew the allegations against father, and that the High Prince saw them as credible.
"Revelar,"
father said, eyes forward.
"May I sit?"
He took a seat beside father, the one that Helleran as heir would have used if he'd been there. Revelar's two servants took up places behind him. They somehow managed to convey a sense of disapproval of father without saying anything.
"Is your son going to duel today?" father asked. "Actually, yes. Hopefully he can keep all of his parts. We wouldn't want your experience to become a tradition." Now, Lynn," Revelar said. "That is no way to speak to a business associate." "Business associate? We have dealings of which I am not aware."
One of Revelar's servants, the woman, set a small sheaf of pages on the table before father. Shallan's stepmother took them hesitantly, then began to read them out loud. The terms were for an exchange of goods, father trading some of his breech tree cotton and raw shum to Revelar in exchange for a small payment. Revelar would then take the goods to market for sale. Father stopped the reading 3/4 of the way through.
"Are you delusional? One clear mark a bag? A tenth of what that shum is worth. Considering patrols of roadways and maintenance fees paid back to the villages where the materials are harvested, I would lose spheres on this deal.
Oh, it is not so bad, Revelar said. I think you will find the arrangement quite agreeable.
You're insane. I'm popular.
Father frowned, growing red-faced. Shallan could remember a time when she'd rarely, if ever, seen him angry. Those days were long, long dead.
Popular? Father demanded. What does you may or may not know?
Revelar said.
That the High Prince himself recently visited my estates. It seems he likes what I've been doing for this princedom's textiles. That, added to my son's dueling prowess, has drawn attention to my house. I have been invited to visit the High Prince in Vaidenar 1 week out of 10, starting next month.
At times, Father was not the cleverest of men, but he did have a mind for politics. So Shallan thought, at least, though she did so want to believe the best about him. Either way, he saw this implication immediately.
You rat, Father whispered.
You have very few options open to you, Lin,
Revelar said, leaning toward him.
Your house is on the decline, your reputation in shambles. You need allies. I need to look the part of a financial genius to the High Prince. We can assist one another.
Father bowed his head. Outside the box, the first duelists were announced, an inconsequential bout.
Everywhere I step, I find only corners,
Father whispered.
Slowly, they trap me.
Revelar pushed the papers toward Shallan's stepmother once more.
Would you start again? I suspect your husband was not listening carefully the last time.
He glanced at Shallan.
And does the child need to be here?
Shallan left without a word. It was what she'd wanted anyway, though she did feel bad leaving Father. He didn't often speak with her, let alone ask for her opinion, but he did seem to be stronger when she was near. He was so disconcerted that he didn't even send one of the guards with her. She slipped out of the box, satchel under her arm, and passed through the Devar servants who were preparing her father's meal. Freedom! Freedom was as valuable as an emerald brome to Shallan, and as rare as a larkin. She hurried away, lest her father realize he had given no orders for her to be accompanied. One of the guards at the perimeter, Jix, stepped toward her anyway, but then looked back at the box. He went that way instead, perhaps intending to ask if he should follow. Best to not be easily found when he returned. Shallan took a step toward the fair, with its exotic merchants and wonderful sights. There would be guessing games, and perhaps a world singer telling tales of distant kingdoms. Over the polite clapping of the light eyes watching the duel behind her, she could hear drums from the common dark eyes, along with singing and merriment. Work first. Darkness lay over her house like a storm's shadow. She would find the sun. She would. That meant turning back to the dueling grounds, for now. She rounded the back of the boxes, weaving between parchmen who bowed and dark eyes who gave her nods or bows depending on their rank. She eventually found a box where several lesser light-eyed families shared space in the shade. Elita, daughter of Bright Lord Tavenar, sat on the end, just within the sunlight shining through the side of the box. She stared at the duelists with a vapid expression, head slightly cocked, a whimsical smile on her face. Her long hair was a pure black. Shallan stepped up beside the box and hissed at her. The older girl turned, frowning, then raised hands to her lips. She glanced at her parents, then leaned down.
Shallan! I told you to expect me,
Shallan whispered back.
Did you think about what I wrote you?
Elita reached into the pocket of her dress, then slipped out a small note. She grinned mischievously and nodded. Shallan took the note.
You'll be able to get away? I'll need to take my handmaid, but otherwise I can go where I want.
What would that be like? Shallan ducked away quickly. Technically, she outranked Elita's parents, but age was a funny thing among the Light Eyes. Sometimes the higher-ranked child didn't seem nearly as important when speaking to adults of a lower dawn. Besides, Bright Lord and Brightness Tavenar had been there on that day, when the bastard had come. They were not fond of father, or his children. Shallan backed away from the boxes, then turned toward the fair itself. Here she paused nervously. The Middlefest Fair was an intimidating collage of people and places. Nearby, a group of tenors drank at long tables and placed bets on the matches. The lowest rank of Light Eyes, they were barely above Dark Eyes. They not only had to work for their living, they weren't even merchants or master craftsmen. They were just people. Helleran had said there were many of them in the cities, as many as there were Dark Eyes. That seemed very odd to her. Odd and fascinating at the same time. She itched to find a corner to watch where she would not be noticed, her sketchpad out and her imagination boiling. Instead, she forced herself to move around the edge of the fair. The tent that her brothers had spoken of would be on the outer perimeter, wouldn't it? Dark-eyed fairgoers gave her a wide berth, and she found herself afraid. Her father spoke of how a young light-eyed girl could be a target for the brutish people of the lower classes. Surely nobody would harm her here in the open with so many people about. Still, she clutched her satchel to her chest and found herself trembling as she walked. What would it be like to be brave like Helleran, as her mother had been?
Her mother.
Brightness?
Shallan shook herself. How long had she been standing there on the path? The sun had moved. She turned sheepishly to find Jix the guard standing behind her. Though he had a gut and rarely kept his hair combed, Jix was strong. She had once seen him pull a cart out of the way when the Chull's hitch broke. He'd been one of her father's guards for as long as she could remember. "Ah," she said, trying to cover her nervousness.
"You're here to accompany me?"
"Well, I was gonna bring you back."
"Did my father order you to?"
Jix chewed on the yama root, called cussweed by some, in his cheek.
"It was busy."
"Then you will accompany me?"
She shook from the nervousness of saying it.
"I suppose."
She breathed out a sigh of relief and turned around on the pathway, stone where rock buds and shale bark had been scraped away. She turned one way, then the other.
We need to find the gambling pavilion.
That's not a place for a lady.
Jix eyed her.
Particularly not one of your age, Brightness.
Well, I suppose you can go tell my father what I'm doing.
She shuffled from one foot to the other.
And in the meantime, Jix said. You'll try to find it on your own, won't you? Go in by yourself if you find it.
She shrugged, blushing. That was exactly what she'd do.
Which means I'd have left you wandering around in a place like that without protection.
He groaned softly.
Why do you defy him like this, Brightness? You're just going to make him angry.
I think he will anger no matter what I or anyone does, she said. The sun will shine, the high storms will blow, and father will yell. That's just how life is.
She bit her lip.
The gambling pavilion? I promise that I will be brief.
This way, Jix said.
He didn't walk particularly quickly as he led her, and he frequently glared at dark-eyed fairgoers who passed. Jix was light-eyed, but only of the eighth dawn. Pavilion turned out to be too grand a term for the patched and ripped tarp strung up at the edge of the fairgrounds. She'd have found it on her own soon enough. The thick canvas with sides that hung down a few feet made it surprisingly dark inside. Men crowded together in there. The few women that Shallan saw had the fingers cut out of the gloves on their safe hands. Scandalous! She found herself blushing as she stopped at the perimeter, looking in at the dark, shifting forms. Men shouted inside with raw voices, any sense of Voran decorum left out in the sunlight. This was indeed not a place for someone like her. She had trouble believing it was a place for anyone.
"How about I go in for you?" Jix said. "Is it a bet you're wanting to—"
Shallan pushed forward. Ignoring her own panic, her discomfort, she moved into the darkness, because if she did not, then it meant that none of them were resisting, that nothing would change. Jix stayed at her side, shoving her some space. She had trouble breathing inside. The air was dank with sweat and curses. Men turned and glanced at her. Bows, even nods, were slow in coming if they were offered at all. The implication was clear. If she wouldn't obey social conventions by staying out, they didn't have to obey them by showing her deference.
"Is there something specific you're searching for?" Jix asked. "Cards? Guessing games?
Axe-hound fights?"
Jix groaned.
"You're gonna end up stabbed, and I'm gonna end up on a roasting spit. This is crazy."
She turned, noting a group of men cheering. That sounded promising. She ignored the increasing trembling in her hands, and also tried to ignore a group of drunk men sitting in a ring on the ground, staring at what appeared to be vomit. The cheering men sat on crude benches with others crowded around. A glimpse between bodies showed two small axe-hounds. There were no Spren. When people crowded about like this, Spren were rare, even though the emotions seemed to be very high. One set of benches was not crowded. Balat sat here, coat unbuttoned, leaning on a post in front of him with arms crossed. His disheveled hair and stooped posture gave him an uncaring look, but his eyes lusted. He watched the poor animals killing one another, fixated on them with the intensity of a woman reading a powerful novel. Shallan stepped up to him, Jix remaining a little ways behind. Now that he'd seen Balat, the guard relaxed.
"Balat?"
Shallan asked timidly.
"Balat!"
He glanced at her, then nearly toppled off his bench. He scrambled up to his feet.
"What in the— Shallan! Get out of here! What are you doing?"
He reached for her. She cringed down despite herself. He sounded like father. As he took her by the shoulder, she held up the note from Elita. The lavender paper, dusted with perfume, seemed to glow. Balat hesitated. To the side, one axe-hound bit deeply into the leg of the other. Blood sprayed the ground, deep violet.
"What is it?"
Balat asked.
"That is the glyph pair of House Tavanar."
"It's from Elita."
"Elita? The daughter? Why? What?"
Shallan broke the seal, opening the letter to read for him. "She wishes to walk with you along the fairgrounds stream. She says she'll be waiting there with her handmaid if you want to come."
Balat ran a hand through his curling hair. "Elita? She's here? Of course she's here. Everyone is here. You talked to her? Why? But—"
"I know how you've looked at her," Shallan said, "the few times you've been near."
"So you talked to her?" Balat demanded. "Without my permission? You said I'd be interested in something like—" He took the letter. "Like this?"
Shallan nodded, wrapping her arms around herself. Balat looked back toward the fighting axe-hounds. He bet because it was expected of him, but he didn't come here for the money, unlike Jushu would. Balat ran his hand through his hair again, then looked back at the letter. He wasn't a cruel man. She knew it was a strange thing to think, considering what he sometimes did. Shallan knew the kindness he showed, the strength that hid within him. He hadn't acquired this fascination with death until Mother had left him. He could come back, stop being like that. He could.
I need... Balat looked out of the tent. I need to go. She'll be waiting for me. I shouldn't make her wait.
He buttoned up his coat. Shallan nodded eagerly, following him from the pavilion. Jix trailed along behind, though a couple of men called out to him. He must be known in the pavilion. Balat stepped out into the sunlight. He seemed a changed man, just like that. Balat? Shallan asked. I didn't see Jushu in there with you.
He didn't come to the pavilion.
What? I thought...
I don't know where he went, Balat said. He met some people right after we arrived.
He looked toward the distant stream that ran down from the heights and through a channel around the fairgrounds.
What do I say to her?
How should I know?
You're a woman, too.
I'm 14.
She wouldn't spend time courting anyway.
Father would choose her a husband. His only daughter was too precious to be wasted on something fickle, like her own powers of decision.
I guess I'll just talk to her, Balat said.
He jogged off without another word. Shallan watched him go, then sat down on a rock and trembled, arms around herself. That place, the tent, it had been horrible. She sat there for an extended time, feeling ashamed of her weakness but also proud. She'd done it. It was small, but she'd done something. Eventually she rose and nodded to Jix, letting him lead the way back toward their box. Father should be finished with his meeting by now. It turned out that he had finished that meeting only to start another. A man she did not know sat next to Father with a cup of chilled water in one hand. Tall, slender, and blue-eyed, he had deep black hair without a hint of impurity, and wore clothing the same shade. He glanced at Shallan as she stepped up into the box. The man started, dropping his cup to the table. He caught it with a swift lunge, keeping it from tipping over, then turned to stare at her with a slack jaw. It was gone in a second, replaced with an expression of practiced indifference.
"Clumsy fool," Father said.
The newcomer turned away from Shallan, speaking softly to Father. Shallan's stepmother stood to the side with the cooks. Shallan slipped over to her. "Who is that?" "Nobody of consequence," Malise said. "He claims to have brought word from your brother, but is of low enough don that he can't even produce a writ of lineage." "My brother? Helleran?" Malise nodded. Shallan turned back to the newcomer. She caught with a subtle movement the man slipping something from his coat pocket and moving it up toward the drinks. A shock coursed through Shallan. She raised a hand. "Poison!" The newcomer covertly dumped the pouch's contents into his own drink, then raised it to his lips, gulping down the powder. What had it been? Shallan lowered her hand. The newcomer stood up a moment later. He didn't bow to Father as he left. He gave Shallan a smile, then was down the steps and out of the box. Word from Helleran. What had it been? Shallan timidly moved to the table. Father? Father's eyes were on the duel in the center of the ring. Two men with swords, no shields, harking back to classical ideals. Their sweeping methods of fighting were said to be an imitation of fighting with a shard blade. Word from Nan Helleran? Shallan prodded.
You will not speak his name, Father said. You will not speak of that one, Father said, looking to her, thunder in his expression. Today I declare him disinherited. Tet Balat is officially now Nan-Balat. Wikim becomes Tet. Jushu becomes Asha. I have only 3 sons.
She knew better than to push him when he was like this. But how would she discover what the messenger had said? She sank into her chair, shaken again.
"Your brothers avoid me," Father said, watching the duel. "Not one chooses to dine with their father as would be proper."
Shallan folded her hands in her lap.
"Jushu is probably drinking somewhere," Father said. "The Storm Father only knows where Balat has run off to. Wakim refuses to leave the carriage."
He downed the wine in his cup.
"Will you speak with him? This has not been a good day. If I went to him, I'd worry what I would do."
Shallan rose, then rested a hand on her father's shoulder. He slumped, leaning forward, one hand around the empty wine flagon. He raised his other hand and patted hers on his shoulder, his eyes distant. He did try. They all did. Shallan sought out their carriage, which stood parked with a number of others near the western slope of the fairgrounds. Jella trees here rose high, their hardened trunks colored the light brown of creme. The needles sprouted like a thousand tongues of fire from each limb, though the nearest ones pulled in as she approached. She was surprised to see a mink slinking in the shadows. She'd expected all those in the area to have been trapped by now. The coachman played cards in a ring nearby. Some of them had to stay and watch the carriages, though Shallan had heard Ren speaking of some kind of rotation, so that they all got a chance at the fair. In fact, Ren wasn't there at the moment, though the other coachman bowed as she passed. Wakim sat in their carriage. The slender, pale youth was only 15 months older than Shallan. He shared some resemblance to his twin, but few people mistook them for one another. Jushu looked older, and Wakim was so thin he looked sickly. Shallan climbed in to sit across from Wakim, setting her satchel on the seat beside her.
"Did Father send you?" Wakim asked. "Or did you come on one of your new little missions of mercy?"
"Both."
Wakim turned away from her, looking out the window toward the trees away from the fair.
"You can't fix us, Shallan. Jushu will destroy himself. It's only a matter of time. Balat is becoming Father step by step. Malise spends one night in two weeping. Father will kill her one of these days, like he did Mother."
"And you?"
Shallan asked. It was the wrong thing to say, and she knew it the moment it came out of her mouth.
"Me? I won't be around to see any of it. I'll be dead by then."
Shallan wrapped her arms around herself, pulling her legs up beneath her on the seat. Brightness Hashe would have chided her for the unladylike posture.
"What did she do? What did she say? He's right," she thought. "I can't fix this. Helleran could have. I can't."
They were all slowly unraveling.
"So what was it?" Wakim said. "Out of curiosity, what did you come up with to save me? I'm guessing you used the girl on Balat."
She nodded.
"You were obvious about that," Wakim said, "with the letters you sent her.
Jushu? What of him?"
"I have a list of the day's duels," Shallan whispered. "He so wishes he could duel. If I show him the fights, maybe he'll want to come watch them."
"You'll have to find him first," Wakim said with a snort. "And what about me? You have to know that neither swords nor pretty faces will work for me."
Feeling a fool, Shallan dug in her satchel and came out with several sheets of paper.
"Drawings?
Math problems."
Wakim frowned and took them from her, absently scratching the side of his face as he looked them over.
"I'm no ardent. I'll not be boxed up and forced to spend my days convincing people to listen to the Almighty, who suspiciously has nothing to say for himself."
"That doesn't mean you can't study," Shallan said. "I gathered those from Father's books, equations for determining high storm timing. I translated and simplified the writing to glyphs so you could read them. I figured you could try to guess when the next ones would come."
He shuffled through the papers.
"You copied and translated it all, even the drawings.
Storms, Shallan? How long did this take you?"
She shrugged. It had taken weeks, but she had nothing but time.
Days sitting in the gardens, evenings sitting in her room, the occasional visit to the Ardents for some peaceful tutoring about the Almighty. It was good to have things to do. "This is stupid," Wakim said, lowering the papers. "What do you think you'll accomplish? I can't believe you wasted so much time on this." Shallan bowed her head, and then, blinking tears, scrambled out of the carriage. It felt horrible, not just Wakim's words, but the way her emotions betrayed her. She couldn't hold them in. She hastened away from the carriages, hoping the coachman wouldn't see her wiping her eyes with her safe hand. She sat down on a stone and tried to compose herself, but failed, tears flowing freely. She turned her head aside as a few parshmen trotted past, running their master's axe-hounds. There would be several hunts as part of the festivities.
"Axe-hound," a voice said from behind her.
Shallan jumped, safe hand to breast, and spun. He rested up on a tree limb, wearing his black outfit. He moved as she saw him, and the spiky leaves around him retreated in a wave of vanishing red and orange. It was the messenger who had spoken to Father earlier.
"I have wondered," the messenger said, "if any of you find the term odd. You know what an axe is, but what is a hound?"
"What does that matter?" Shallan asked.
"Because it is a word," the messenger replied. "A simple word with a world embedded inside like a bud waiting to open." He studied her. "I did not expect to find you here."
"I..." Her instincts told her to back away from this strange man. And yet, he had news of Helleran, news her father would never share. "Where did you expect to find me? At the dueling grounds?"
The man swung around the branch and dropped to the ground. Shallan stepped backward. "No need for that," the man said, settling onto a rock. "You needn't fear me. I'm terribly ineffective at hurting people. I blame my upbringing."
"You have news of my brother Helleran?"
The messenger nodded. "He is a very determined young man."
"Where is he?"
"Doing things he finds very important. I would fault him for it, as I find nothing more frightening than a man trying to do what he has decided is important. Very little in the world has ever gone astray, at least on a grand scale, because a person decided to be frivolous."
"He is well, though?" she asked.
"Well enough. The message for your father was that he has eyes nearby and is watching."
No wonder it had put Father in a bad mood. "Where is he?" Shallan said, timidly stepping forward. "Did he tell you to speak to me?"
"I'm sorry, young one," the man said, expression softening. "He gave me only that brief message for your father, and that only because I mentioned I would be traveling this direction."
"Oh, I assumed he'd sent you here. I mean that coming to us was your primary purpose."
"Turns out that it was." "Tell me, young one, does Spren speak to you?"
"The lights going out. Life drained from them. Twisted symbols the eye should not see. Her mother's soul in a box." "I," she said, "no. Why would a Spren speak to me?"
"No voices," the man said, leaning forward. "Do spheres go dark when you are near?"
"I'm sorry," Shallan said, "but I should be getting back to my father. He will be missing me."
"Your father is slowly destroying your family," the messenger said. "Your brother was right on that count. He was wrong about everything else."
"Such as?"
"Look."
The man nodded back toward the carriages. She was at the right angle to see into the window of her father's carriage. She squinted. Inside, Wakim leaned forward, using a pencil taken from her satchel, which she'd left behind. He scribbled at the mathematical problems she'd left. He was smiling. Warmth. That warmth she felt, a deep glow, was like the joy she had known before. Long ago, before everything had gone wrong, before Mother. The messenger whispered,
"Two blind men,
waited at the end of an era contemplating beauty. They sat atop the world's highest cliff, overlooking the land and seeing nothing.
Huh?
She looked to him. Can beauty be taken from a man? The first asked the second.
It was taken from me, the second replied, for I cannot remember it.
This man was blinded in a childhood accident.
I pray to the god beyond each night to restore my sight, so that I may find beauty again.
Is beauty something one must see, then? The first asked.
Of course. That is its nature. How can you appreciate a work of art without seeing it?
I can hear a work of music, the first said.
Very well, you can hear some kinds of beauty, but you cannot know full beauty without sight. You can know only a small portion of beauty.
A sculpture, the first said.
Can I not feel its curves and slopes? The touch of the chisel that transformed common rock into uncommon wonder?
I suppose, said the second, that you can know the beauty of a sculpture.
And what of the beauty of food? Is it not a work of art when a chef crafts a masterpiece to delight the tastes?
I suppose, said the second, that you can know the beauty of a chef's art.
And what of the beauty of a woman? The first said.
Can I not know her beauty in the softness of her caress? The kindness of her voice? The keenness of her mind as she reads philosophy to me? Can I not know this beauty? Can I not know most kinds of beauty, even without my eyes?
Very well, said the second.
But what if your ears were removed, your hearing taken away, your tongue taken out, your mouth forced shut, your sense of smell destroyed? What if your skin were burned so that you could no longer feel? What if all that remained to you was pain? You could not know beauty then. It can be taken from a man.
The messenger stopped, cocking his head at Shallan.
What?
She asked.
What think you?
Can beauty be taken from a man?
If he could not touch, taste, smell, hear, see? What if all he knew was pain? Has that man had beauty taken from him?
What did this have to do with anything? Does the pain change day by day?
Let us say it does, the messenger said.
Then beauty to that person would be the times when the pain lessens. Why are you telling me this story?
The messenger smiled.
To be human is to seek beauty, Shallan. Do not despair. Do not end the hunt because thorns grow in your way. Tell me, what is the most beautiful thing you can imagine?
Father is probably wondering where I am.
Indulge me, the messenger said. I will tell you where your brother is.
A wonderful painting, then. That is the most beautiful thing.
Lies, the messenger said. Tell me the truth. What is it, child? Beauty to you. What was it?
Mother still lives,
she found herself whispering, meeting his eyes.
And?
And we are in the gardens, Shallan continued. She is speaking to my father and he is laughing and holding her. We are all there, including Helleran. He never left. The people my mother knew, Drader, never came to our house. Mother loves me. She teaches me philosophy and she shows me how to draw.
Good, the messenger said. But you can do better than that. What is that place? What does it feel like?
It's spring, Shallan shot back, growing annoyed. And the moss vines bloom a vigorous red. They smell sweet, and the air is moist from the morning's high storm. Mother whispers, but there is music to her tone. And father's laugh doesn't echo. It rises high into the air, bathing us all. Helleran is teaching Jushu swords, and they spar nearby. Wikim laughs as Helleran is struck on the side of the leg. He is studying to be an ardent as mother wanted. I am sketching them all, charcoal scratching paper. I feel warm despite the slight chill to the air. I have a steaming cup of cider beside me, and I taste the sweetness in my mouth from the sip I just took. It is beautiful because it could have been. It should have been.
She blinked tears. She saw it.
Stormfather, but she saw it. She heard her mother's voice, saw Jushu giving up spheres to Balat as he lost the duel, but laughing as he paid, uncaring of the loss. She could feel the air, smell the scents, hear the sounds of songlings in the brush. Almost, it became real. Wisps of light rose before her. The messenger had gotten out a handful of spheres and held them toward her while staring into her eyes. The steamy stormlight rose between them. Shallan lifted her fingers, the image of her ideal life wrapped around her like a comforter. No. She drew back. The misty light faded.
I see, the messenger said softly. You do not yet understand the nature of lies. I had that trouble myself long ago. The shards here are very strict. You will have to see the truth, child, before you can expand upon it. Just as a man should know the law before he breaks it.
Shadows from her past shifted in the depths, surfacing just briefly toward the light. Could you help?
No, not now. You aren't ready, for one, and I have work to be about. Another day. Keep cutting at those thorns, strong one, and make a path for the light. The things you fight aren't completely natural.
He stood up, then bowed to her. My brother, she said.
He is in Alethkar.
Alethkar? Why?
Because that is where he feels he is needed, of course. If I see him again, I will give him word of you.
The messenger walked away on light feet, his steps smooth, almost like moves in a dance. Shallan watched him go, the deep things within her settling again, returning to the forgotten parts of her mind. She realized she had not even asked the man his name.